Good evening from the Robert F. and Gertrude L. Shook Music Recital Hall on the beautiful river campus of Southeast Missouri State University. I am Doyle Privett, President of the University Board of Regents. On behalf of the board, University President Dr. Ken Dobbins, faculty, staff, and students, I welcome you to the debate of the four candidates for the U.S. House of Representatives from Missouri's 8th Congressional District. Our moderator tonight is Dr. Thomas Hardy, Professor Emeritus of Speech Communications and Theater at Southeast. Dr. Hardy is a retired faculty member from the university where he was an award-winning professor, a nationally recognized debate coach, and chair of the Department of Speech Communication. He is currently a food journalist for the Southeast Missouri newspaper and host of several programs on the university's national public radio station, KRCU. Dr. Hardy.
Thank you, Mr. Privett. It's been said that in a democracy like ours, a debate without a decision is preferable to a decision without a debate. Tonight's event is in keeping with that tradition, though the sponsors of this event hope that what transpires tonight might very well be helpful to you as you make one of the most important decisions citizens in a democracy can ever make, namely the question of who should represent you in the halls of government. And we're delighted that we have the four candidates who are vying for that honor from Missouri's 8th Congressional District with us here tonight to join in this debate and this exercise in democracy. Let me introduce them to you right now. First, we have to my immediate left, Mr. Steve Hodges, representing the Democratic Party. Next to him, we have Mr. Jason Smith from the Republican Party. Seated next to him, Mr. Doug Enyart of the Constitution Party. And finally, seated next to him, Mr. Bill Slantz of the Libertarian Party. Now, before we begin the debate, let me just briefly go over the rules. Each candidate will have 3 minutes for an opening statement, and the order of those statements was predetermined by a random drawing which took place just a few minutes before we began, and the candidates, in fact, are seated in the order in which they drew. There will also be two-minute closing statements at the end of the debate. The order of those will begin with the two candidates who spoke last. Now, in between the opening and closing statements, of course, the candidates will submit two questions from our distinguished panel. Let me introduce them to you right now. First, we have from KFES Heartland News, KFES 12 Heartland News, the anchor, Mr. Jeff Cunningham, and from the Southeast Missouri, the editor, Mr. Bob Miller. Finally, let me tell you how the question and answer period will operate. Each candidate will in turn be asked questions. The candidate to whom a question is originally directed will have 2 minutes to respond. Each of the other candidates in turn will have 1 minute to make a comment, and we will rotate those questions among the candidates, starting with the candidate who gave the first opening statement. Finally, let me just remind the members of the audience that in order to keep as much time for the candidates as possible, we ask you to refrain from applause or other audible reactions until the end of the debate. Finally, one more introduction to make before we begin the debate. My colleague sitting next to me here, Mr. Bob Cherchio, is going to be our official timekeeper. So, I think we're all ready for the debate, so let us begin. As you know, we'll start with opening statements in the order in which the panelists are seated. And so that means we'll begin with the first opening statement from Mr. Steve Hodges. You've got 3 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Dr. Hart. First of all, I'd like to thank Southeast Missouri State University, my alma mater, undergraduate alma mater, for hosting this event, along with KFES-TV and the Southeast Missourian and the Russ family. I think it's very important that we have events like this to allow the public to view the candidates, to hear what their answers are on the issues, and to become informed voters. I'm running, quite frankly, because I think Washington has lost touch with small communities like ours. And I know what those are like because I've lived it. For some reason, we have a lack of common sense in Washington, D.C. that's evaded them in considering the people of Southeast Missouri and the 8th Congressional District. You know, when I had my grocery store that we operated as a family operation, I would have people come in with a handful of coupons trying to make their budgets stretch, trying to feed their families on a limited income. I don't think Washington, D.C. understands the problems of hardworking people like we have in our district. And there's also something completely illogical about a Congress that wastes too much time and too much of our tax money and then tries to balance a budget by slashing programs like Social Security and Medicare, two vital government programs that are very important to a vital and vulnerable part of our population, that being middle-income families, the handicapped, and seniors. Now, this won't help the family that has those 30-cent coupons, but I'm running because the people of Southeast Missouri deserve a government that responds to them and is not a hindrance to them. Since serving in Jefferson City, I've been known as a consensus builder. I've crossed the aisle to work with members of the opposition party to get some common ground. I think that's important. I think that's what America would like to see. I've worked with Republicans and Governor Nixon to keep a balanced budget without raising taxes and without offering additional burdens on our seniors. I think this is the same common sense approach that should be taken to Washington, D.C., and that's what I plan to do once I'm elected. My name is Steve Hodges, and I appreciate your vote on June 4th. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hodges. Our next opening statement for 3 minutes will be from Mr. Jason Smith.
Thank you. It's truly great to be here tonight. I want to thank the Southeast Missourian and the Russ family, KFDS 12, and also Southeast Missouri State for hosting this event. It's truly an honor to be able to bring forward our conservative message across all 30 counties. This is a great district. It's made up of 30 counties ranging from 40 miles south of St. Louis City to 40 miles east of Springfield. It's the most diversified agriculture district outside the state of California. We grow everything but citrus and rice here. You know, I'm just from the hill country west of here. I grew up in a small town, less than 5,000 people. My father was an auto mechanic and my mother worked in a factory. The values they taught me of hard work and perseverance and fighting for what is right are the values that this district holds. They're clearly priceless. You know, I'm running for Congress because I'm tired of watching Washington, D.C. continue to kick the can down the road. They genuinely don't solve the problems at hand, whether it's balancing the budget, let alone passing a budget. You know, Congress hasn't passed a budget in over 1,400 days, let alone balance a budget, but only 5 times in the last 56 years. People don't want that. Southeast Missouri, Southern Missouri, wants Washington, D.C. to look a lot more like the state of Missouri. In the state of Missouri, for the last 8 years, I have fought wasteful spending and fought to balance a budget without ever increasing taxes. In fact, I co-sponsored legislation to reduce the double taxation on Social Security benefits to our seniors. Folks, I have fought to stop wasteful spending. I have fought to reduce burdensome regulation on family farmers and individuals. There are over 170,000 pages of rules and regulations at the federal government. We need to reduce these burdensome regulations, get government off the back of small businesses and family farmers, and allow them to grow and prosper. We need to repeal Obamacare. Obamacare, for one, took billions of dollars out of Medicare. Folks, that's a problem. That's hurting the folks here in Southeast Missouri and Southern Missouri. I know what it's like to live on a farm. I'm the fourth generation owner of our family farm. I know what it's like to balance a budget and live within its means. I'm a small business owner. I also know what it's like to sign the front of a paycheck rather than just the back of it. We need more of that in Washington. Looking forward to all the questions, and I'm asking for your vote on June 4th.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Smith. The next three-minute opening statement will be from Mr. Enyart.
Thank you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for spending your time coming out here and listening to us. Thank you for those at home who are watching. Ladies and gentlemen, I've been crisscrossing this district ever since this campaign began, and I've been listening to people in small groups, sometimes just a half a dozen in place. And I can tell you, I'm hearing one common refrain, that people are frustrated with their government. They're frustrated with the two parties who have delivered us into this sorry state of affairs. And they're talking to me. Some of them have historically been Democrats. Some of them have been historically Republicans. The two major parties have dominated the political landscape for as long as any of us can remember. For 150 years. And we're supposed to believe that they're going to fix it? No, I think not. Ladies and gentlemen, if we're going to go down a different path, it's going to take a different party. we're going to have to really make some different decisions other than what we've had in the past. We're going to have to make a decision other than Coke or Pepsi. We're going to have to make a decision other than one side of the coin or the other. Because the truth is, there's not that much difference between them. They're all part and parcel of the same corporatocracy that's in charge of our government. We need to take it back. We, the people, have got to stand up and do something different. We've got to take back this country. We need a constitutionally limited government. The Constitution Party stands on the solid foundation of the Constitution, and the Constitution itself stands on the solid foundation of natural law, God's law. We are endowed by our Creator with inalienable rights, or unalienable, as some of the groups like to put it that I've been talking to, groups that some of these folks haven't gone and talked to. Those are the folks that I've been talking to, and they're sending a message loud and clear. They're tired of it. They're ready for change. I'm asking the people at home, I'm asking everyone within the reach of my voice, vote for the Constitution. I will carry the message. We need more choices. They need more competition. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Anyart. And the final three-minute opening statement then will come from Mr. Slants.
Thank you. After three decades of Republican rule, the 8th District is in terrible shape. It's the poorest district in the state and one of the poorest districts in the nation. The family farm has never faced such adversity, thanks to special interest pet projects like the Farm Bill and big ag subsidies. We need real solutions. We need someone in office who will actually stand behind those solutions. We do not need Emerson 3.0. The same people that are responsible for crafting cronyist schemes like the Monsanto Protection Act are now putting their support behind my opponent, Jason Smith. The two-party system has sold this district out to special interest, and I cannot stand by and allow the abuse of power. The Democrat and Republican, I am not a Democrat or Republican. I am a libertarian, and when I say I'll stand for freedom and limited government, I actually mean it. Through my eyes, there is very little difference between a Democrat and a Republican. Ultimately, they believe big government can solve our problems. You may hear statements that talk about balancing the budget or reducing spending increases, and I'm here to tell you simply that that will not and is not going to happen under this present state of Congress. Today's Congress can't balance the budget because they're unwilling to make the changes necessary to do so. Simply, we are spending $3.5 trillion a year and only bringing in $2.5 trillion a year. We are upside down by $1 trillion. That is $10,000 for each American family. So in order to balance the budget, we either need to take another $10,000 from each family, or we need to cut spending. I don't know about you, but I'm for cutting the spending. Neither the Democrats nor the Republicans are willing to do that, because that would mean an end to the relationships, the ones who prop them up, the special interest. Throughout the evening, you'll hear hyperbole about what needs fixing. I will be the only one offering real solutions. Do you know what I... There are many reasons the government is dysfunctional and not working for you. Three big ones stick out to me. It's the lawyers. The large majority of Congress is made up of attorneys. It's the lobbyists and the special interest and the money and the power grab. I'm not going to sit here and complain without offering you some remedies on how to fix it. Let's elect non-lawyers, regular citizens, business people. Let's get rid of the lobbyists and the special interest by deregulating, defunding. This removes all the fuel, and then out the door goes the money and the power grab. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Slants. There are your opening statements. Now it's time for questions. As you know, we'll begin with the candidate who had the first opening speech. Each candidate who has a question directly addressed to him will get 2 minutes to respond. The other candidates, in turn, will have 1 minute to comment. And the questions, of course, will come from our panel. Mr. Cunningham, do you have the first question?
That's right. Gentlemen, good evening.
Good evening.
As you heard, our first question will be directed to Mr. Hodges. It concerns Social Security. Mr. Hodges, you said you don't want to cut Social Security benefits to seniors. The government stated that Social Security trust funds will become exhausted as soon as 2033. So the question, what changes do you feel are necessary to ensure the long-term viability of Social Security?
Social Security is one of the most important issues for the people of Southeast Missouri. Over half of American seniors depend on Social Security benefits for their income. My parents are both 86. That's the only source of income that they have. They depend on that to pay their bills. I think that we must preserve the Social Security program, find ways to fund it that are efficient, and anything past that is non-negotiable. My opponent, Mr. Smith, would probably be a proponent for voting for the Ryan budget. All the Republicans in the House voted for it. The Ryan budget would take Social Security and gut it and perhaps privatize it. It would also take Medicare and make changes in it that would put an additional $6,400 per person, a cost to seniors who can't afford to live right now. The average family in the 8th Congressional District makes $36,000. That doesn't stretch very far. Again, I will support Social Security and Medicare to the end, and I will work in Congress to make sure that viable alternatives are developed.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Smith, do you have a comment?
Yes. I'm actually, thank you for asking that question. As Mr. Hodges referred to, he said my opponent probably. He wasn't for sure of where I am on this position, but he's tried to make a position for me. My parents are both on Social Security. Do you imagine if I would support something to dismantle Social Security? I would not be invited to Thanksgiving dinner, I can tell you that. But I believe we have promises made to our seniors. You know, people 50 years and above, let's say that example, they've paid into the system their entire life. Government should not dismantle and take it away. You know, but people that are my age, we're going to have to do something differently because it's not going to be there. Every report shows it's not there. But we have to maintain and keep the promises to the seniors that have relied on it their entire life, and negative campaign ads don't work for me.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Anyard, do you have a comment?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the process.
You have 1 minute to respond to the question or to the answers which the other candidates have made.
Well,
so
I'll
you have one minute
respond
to respond.
To the question. The question is, what are we going to do about security, Social Security? The sad truth is Social Security is headed for the cliff. Two people working for every person that's already retired just simply doesn't work. Social Security was fundamentally flawed from the beginning. Populations don't rise at a steady state. When they put Social Security together, they didn't foresee the baby boom. But this is a natural flow of things, always. Populations boom, and then they fall. It has always been that way. Again, two people working for every person that's retired just simply doesn't work, especially when you take into consideration all the other taxes they're going to have to be paying, like my grandchildren sitting right here beside me. They're being labeled the tax-paying generation. They can't support me and the taxes that we're putting on them every day.
Thank you. And Mr. Slance, do you have a comment?
My view on Social Security is a little more ominous, but not as bad as people think. Those who have paid into the Social Security system need to be able to take out what they've put in. No questions asked. But Social Security needs to be phased out completely and replaced with a private system that people can be encouraged to enter into as they enter the workforce. No one who's contributed to Social Security should be deprived of the Social Security. But in my viewpoint, its life has lived and it's time to phase it out entirely. Those who are entering the workforce today should not participate in Social Security and not take Social Security benefits.
All right, thank you very much. The next question will go to Mr. Smith and it will come from Mr. Miller.
Good evening.
Good evening.
There was a lot of talk in the opening statements about the federal deficit. So, Mr. Smith, could you elaborate on your plans to get the federal deficit under control?
When you look at the federal deficit, we're facing over $16.4 trillion of debt. That's more than $53,000 for every man, woman, and child in the United States. Our biggest issue facing the United States is our fiscal irresponsibility. The last thing we need to do is to look like the country of Greece. We're going to have to clearly get down to the basics and truly first pass a budget. Like I said, we haven't passed a budget in 1,400 days. We need to balance a budget, but we need to first pass a budget. When you're looking at wasteful spending, the fact that we spent $41,000 apiece for every new toilet in Denali National Park in Alaska is ridiculous. This is the kind of wasteful spending you see. We have 2.8 million federal employees. 500,000 of those federal employees make over $100,000 a year. Folks, there's waste throughout the federal government in numerous areas. Let's start looking at the different agencies. I would be very supportive of eliminating the EPA, because the EPA is eliminating jobs in the 8th Congressional District, and they need to get off our backs and allow our businesses to grow and allow our farmers to survive.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Anyart. You have 1 minute for a comment, if you'd like.
Ladies and gentlemen, the federal debt is the biggest reason, or the second biggest reason, next to my grandchildren, I got into this race. We're spending more than we can sustain. We're borrowing 40 to 46 cents on every dollar that the government spends. I'm the only candidate that's sitting before you who has worked both as an employee and as a contractor for state and federal agencies. I can tell you beyond a shadow of a doubt there is waste at every level. There is even waste at the county level. We have plenty of cutting to do. We can cut a lot and still have plenty of the essential government services. But on that note right there, we have a lot of government we really don't need. Mr. Smith said he'd get rid of the EPA. Well, I got another target in my crosshairs. That's the Department of Homeland Security and TSA. There's two of them. We haven't had them that long. They can easily be gotten rid of quickly, overnight. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Slance, you have 1 minute for a response.
Agreed completely, Doug. You want spending cuts? I'll give you spending cuts. If elected, I'll immediately sponsor legislation to eliminate the Department of Homeland Security. They have served their purpose. Also the TSA. Let the airlines take care of their own security, as well as the EPA, the DEA, and the IRS. I will immediately sponsor legislation to cut every budget of every other federal agency by 10% each year for the next 4 years. The military should remain strong and state-of-the-art. It should be adequate to defend against all enemies. However, the United States cannot afford the cost in blood and money of maintaining a global empire. We need to stop the occupation of other countries and close every foreign military base. This would put $12,000 into the pocket of every family.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Hodges, you have 1 minute.
Thank you. First of all, this is not on the particular question that's been asked, but Jason, I just want to share with you, yes, Missouri is a rice-producing state. We happen to be one of the fourth leading rice producers in the nation. I say that in all fairness to my friends down in Stoddard County, Pemiscot County. Anyway, just as I did in my grocery store, I went around on a daily basis, looking for efficiencies and inefficiencies. We would audit operations, audit the costs that we had associated. I think we have to put an emphasis on that. Government is nothing more than big business. I think that we should work toward a balanced budget. I'm very much in favor of that. It's not going to happen overnight because we've waited way too long to solve this deficit problem. But that would be my approach, to use common sense, make good, tough business decisions as we have in the state of Missouri with Governor Nixon's leadership.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen. The next question will go to Mr. Anyart, and it will come from Mr. Cunningham.
Mr. Inyard, representing the Constitution Party, this question concerns the Constitution. Ever since the school shooting in Connecticut, there's been fierce debate about the Second Amendment. Other amendments, though, have been caught in the crossfire, like restricting violence in video games and movies, which would restrict the First Amendment. Later, the issue of not reading Miranda rights to a U.S. citizen and suspected terrorist, which deals with the Sixth Amendment. Do you feel that some constitutional rights are more important than others or are attacked more than others? How would you seek to protect those rights?
Well, we'd certainly agree that some of our constitutional rights are certainly attacked more than others, but the Constitution must remain intact for all of us, completely, all of our rights. We have to remember that the Constitution doesn't give us our rights. We already had those rights. The Constitution bears a memorial to those rights. And the founders put the most important ones in their Bill of Rights. They thought it was important because they thought that somewhere down the road, somebody would get the bright idea of taking those rights away from us. But in fact, the very Bill of Rights has been used against us. We have the right of the freedom of speech, but then where did hate crimes come from? Where does that fit in? We have the freedom of a religion, but our pastors have been muzzled through legislation. One of the pieces of legislation that I'll be writing is to give pastors their voice back so they won't have to be scared of losing their 501c3 status. The Constitution is a memorial, as I said, and in relationship to the shootings, we have people problems. Guns don't shoot people by themselves, it's people. And in fact, more people are killed by cars than guns all the time. Why did the founders put the Second Amendment in there in the first place? They didn't put it in there so they could hunt. In those days, everybody hunted. It was just common. Why did they put it in there so that you could defend your home? No, that was pretty common too. No, the founders put that in there in the Constitution, and they put it listed at the number two position because they knew that somewhere down the road, the government that they created may be used against us. They knew that we would have to have the ability to resist tyranny, just as we did during their time.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Slance, you have 1 minute for a response.
The Second Amendment should remain untouched. The private ownership and use of firearms or other weapons in a non-invasive way is fully legitimate. Government regulation, licensing, and registration should be abolished. In fact, no guns or ammunition should ever be taxed. Guns are essential for private citizens to protect themselves, but most importantly, against an oppressive government. The NRA is not the champion of the Second Amendment that has claimed itself to be. To me, it's just another lobbying group, and its life is short-lived. I respect the National Association of Gun Rights and Gun Owners of America. I'm the only candidate here who is 100% uncompromising in my defense of the Second Amendment.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Hodges, you have 1 minute for a comment.
Thank you. Well, first of all, I am an NRA member, and I have unwavering support for the Second Amendment. This is something especially, not only nationwide, especially in our particular district, we have hunters, we have hobbyists, we have target shooters, we have collectors of guns. And I want to go on record as saying I think President Obama has been wrong in some of the legislation that he has introduced concerning gun control. I think what he is looking at is trying to find a quick fix for a very minute portion of our population that has caused these troubles, those mentally ill and the professional criminals. And I don't think that we should penalize the entire population just for the acts of a few.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Smith, your comment?
President Obama has been wrong on all pieces of gun restriction legislation that he's introduced, not some, all. In regards to the Second Amendment, I'm a lifetime member of the NRA and the only candidate on this panel that has been endorsed solely by the National Rifle Association. When you're talking about the Constitution of the United States, it's all of it. You can't pick and choose what sections you like, whether it's the First Amendment, Second Amendment, or Tenth Amendment. Apparently, our president, when he doesn't like a particular area, whether it's freedom of press, as subpoenaing AP reporters' phone records, we can see how the president continues to attack our constitutional rights. I can tell you right now, I will stand up to the president and fight him tooth and nail in every aspect he's trying to eliminate and destroy our constitutional rights.
Okay, thank you. The next question will go to Mr. Slance, and it will come from Mr. Miller.
Good evening. Mr. Slancer, you have stated your preference for deregulation, particularly in agriculture. Could you name specifically some regulations you would like to see lifted from farmers? And secondly, do you support farming subsidies as part of the crop insurance program?
The Boot Hill gets its lion's share of government handouts and remains the poorest of the poor in the district. Who's benefiting from all these farm subsidies? The top 10% of the corporate farmers receive 80% of all farm subsidies. Subsidies raise the price of farmland. In a free market, we can let farmers grow and raise what makes sense to them and let consumers buy what they want. Let the Monsanto bought and paid for bureaucrats get them out of policymaking. The U.S. has an absolute competitive edge over the rest of the world. Taxpayers should not be subsidizing it. End the subsidies, end the welfare, let the people farm. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Hodges, your turn for a comment.
Well, this is certainly one of my favorite topics, agriculture. I think it's an absolute shame that Congress has not approved a farm bill up to this date. Economically, agriculture is the driving engine behind the state of Missouri and especially Southeast Missouri. We can go down there and we can see all kinds of different farming operations going on. And the day that you walk into a grocery store and can't get any food because farmers have gone out of business and they can't produce, then it's going to really hit home. You know, a lot of our constituency thinks that's where food comes from, the grocery store. But if you've not lived the life of a farmer, and my father-in-law was one, and my father was one for a period of his life, I think that all these programs are very important to support agriculture, and I will be a supporter of agriculture. That will be one of the first committees that I ask to be assigned to.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Smith, a comment?
I don't have to tour a farm to understand agriculture. It's our way of life in Dent County. You know, folks, when you're talking about protecting agriculture, I've done that in the Missouri House. I passed the constitutional amendment that took several years to do that everyone will be able to vote on in November of 2014 in the state of Missouri to put in the Bill of Rights the protection that farmers will always be able to farm and ranch, and it will not be restricted against environmentalists and animal rights activists that tend to target the way of life, the rural way of life. In regards to regulations, I passed House Bill 1135 last year that put a systematic review process in reviewing all rules and regulations to make sure they don't cause an undue burden on small businesses, family farmers, individuals. These are the kind of policies we need. The question was, what rules and regulations would you get rid of? I would start with the 20,000 new rules that's trying to implement Obamacare. That's a good place to start.
Okay, Mr. Enyart, you have 1 minute for a response.
Thank you. The farm bill, government subsidies in farming, I also get involved in this in my professional life. We were talking about a $17 trillion deficit earlier and what we were going to do about cutting the spending and balancing the budget. I would include the farm bill and the government subsidies for farmers in the ways that we can begin cutting. Now, there's sections of the farm bill that you may not even be aware of, sections for conservation. This is where I live and work. This is where I built my business. So a lot of my clients use these programs. Right now, we're borrowing, again, 40 to 46 cents on every dollar that the federal government is spending. It's not worth some wealthy landowner's welfare to give them a food plot or wildlife pond for my grandkids to pay for. That's my take on it.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen. We're back to Mr. Hodges for the next question, and it will come from Mr. Cunningham.
Mr. Hodges, you're campaigning as a conservative Democrat, and I know one of the areas in which you agree with Republicans is gun rights. Given the horrific mass shootings in the United States, not the least of which in Newtown, Connecticut, would you be in favor of more stringent background checks? And if not, what are the appropriate steps to limit or eliminate school shootings?
Well, Jeff, we already have a number of laws on the books. We already have a number of laws on the books that we're not enforcing about gun control. I think that certainly all of us are saddened by all of those events, those terrible events. What kind of people commit those acts? But yet, I think we need to make legislation and enforce legislation that we already have. Adding more bills, adding more red tape is not the way to do it. That's what people don't want. People don't want additional regulation. And certainly as an advocate for gun control, I am, as an advocate for Second Amendment rights, I will favor that.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Smith, you have a minute for a response.
Clearly, the shootings were tragic and awful. But the policies that Obama has brought forth in gun control are unacceptable. You know, it's not only depriving our freedoms and our constitutional rights, it takes away our jobs in the 8th Congressional District. If you know the district, you would know in Shannon County, Missouri, in Somersville, we manufacture the parts of a semi-automatic weapon that the Democrats in Congress have tried to ban. But not only do we manufacture the parts of that semi-automatic weapon in Somersville, Missouri, we put that gun together in southern Jefferson County in Festus. Folks, when we have liberals in Congress trying to target our constitutional freedoms, they're also trying to ban our jobs and make more people unemployed. You lose 55 jobs in Shannon County, Missouri, or you lose 300 jobs in Jefferson County. That directly affects us and our way of life, and I will stand up to Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama every step of the way.
Okay. Mr. Anyart, do you have a comment for 1 minute?
Every time something bad happens, and there's always throughout human history been bad things happen, but every time something bad happens in our nation, there's those elements within our government that want to pass a law. Well, every law sets limits on somebody. And every law that's passed has unintended consequences. Every law, while it may sound flowery on the title, it may sound like a good idea at the time, we get down the road and then, oops, we figured out, oh, maybe that wasn't really such a good idea. That's how we arrived at this situation. We have laws for everything. We have laws that limit the kind of gas can spouts that you can buy at down Walmart, for crying out loud. We have too many laws. Let's change direction. Let's start turning the ship around, going the other way, and taking laws off the books. That's what I intend to do when I get to Congress. I'll be writing legislation aimed at the government, but not at the people. Thank you.
And Mr. Slance, you have 1 minute to respond.
School shootings and bombings in Boston are horrible and horrific things. They're heinous, they're awful, these people who carry these acts out. You have to question yourself or ask yourself sometimes why, what's in the mind of a person who would do these things. And Doug is right. We don't want a knee-jerk reaction each and every time one of these tragic things happened. We need to have a stable and steady hand. I've said earlier, and I'll state it again, the government regulation, licensing, and registration of guns should be abolished. No guns or ammunition should ever be taxed. I'm in favor of encouraging our young folk to be more secure in their being, not restrict them or burden them with unnecessary policies.
All right, thank you. The next question will go to Mr. Smith, and it will come from Mr. Miller.
Hello. Mr. Smith, you and many others have said that the recipe for economic growth is lower taxes and fewer regulations. The stock market is experiencing a strong rebound and productivity is increasing, yet the unemployment and underemployment rates remain stagnant. How confident are you that tax breaks and deregulation will improve the unemployment situation in the United States?
You know, for one, government doesn't create jobs. Government creates an environment that allows jobs to grow. And our economy is starting to head in the right direction in spite of President Obama and his policies. Without a doubt, I have full certainty that if you reduce taxes, you reduce regulation, businesses will grow. While traveling across this district, one thing that I hear over and over and over again are businesses that, whether they have 55, 56, 57 employees, they are going to reduce those employees because they are scared of the implementation of Obamacare. So they're going to get below the 50 window. Folks, those are real jobs. That's proof that government regulation destroys jobs. You know, we're seeing it. I know of a restaurant owner that owned two restaurants, but he just sold one of them, so he would fall below the 50 window mark. We do not need to allow government to disincentivize growth. I visited a company in Cape Girardeau today. They have 45 employees. It's a distributorship. And you know what they told me? We're going to make sure we don't hit that 50 mark. Even if they need it, they're going to find a way not to get it. That's because of government regulation. That's why we have to reduce government regulation. We have the largest corporate tax in the world. That makes us where we cannot compete globally. Folks, we have to reduce the taxes, reduce regulation, and just let government get off the backs of small business owners, family farmers, and individuals.
Mr. Reignard, your turn for a one-minute response.
Ladies and gentlemen, I said this last week at the candidate forum. I'm going to say it again here, again, so the folks at home can hear me. You're going to hear a lot of similar and same answers from mostly all of us. You really need to do some work this time. You're going to have to look at us deeply and analyze us. Put us in your search engine, Google us. Look for the breadth and depth of our experience. We're all going to tell you that we need to reduce regulations on small businesses. Small businesses where the jobs are created, not the mega corporations. And while you hear a lot of flowery speech out of the major parties that are sitting here, what's the real result? What have they done for the last 150 years? How did we get to this position? How did we get so many regulations? Well, we got so many regulations by sending attorneys to Washington. We got so many regulations by sending career politicians to Washington. Thank you.
Mr. Slance, you have 1 minute for a comment.
A lot of us talk about our jobs being outsourced, and we're outraged by that. But jobs are easily outsourced. Our government fails to recognize that capital and jobs will move around the globe at the speed of light and will not stay where they are penalized by excessive taxation or regulation. Stop taxing. Stop regulating. We need less regulation. Failing that, we should not regulate small businesses in the same fashion that we regulate big corporations. I'm a small businessman. I know how burdensome that can be. Also, we don't want to restrict foreign trade. Why punish ourselves? We're a consumer nation. Currently, of everyone working today, 20% of those people working today are government employees, and they are the second highest paid of all of us. Lastly, the social safety net should be not so comfortable. This will encourage people to go and work.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Hodges, we're back to you for a one-minute response.
Very good. Well, first of all, as a farmer, small business owner, I don't think that we should have additional restrictions or taxes on small business. They're the backbone of our economy. I'm against tax increases in general. You know, about 2 or 3 weeks ago in the last week of session, we had one of the biggest tax increase proposals in the history of the state of Missouri that we voted on. I voted no. Mr. Smith was not there. That was one of the 23 days that he missed, and he wasn't there to vote. So we still don't know, and his constituents don't know, even though he still received pay for that. Now, Mr. Smith also, in 2009, he introduced a bill that would double the sales taxes in the state of Missouri. Double the sales taxes. These would be taxes on food, prescription drugs, doctor visits, rent, and utilities. Now, we've already stated that the average family in the 8th Congressional District has an average income of $36,000. I don't know how he could justify that and feel good about himself.
Okay, thank you. The next question comes from Mr. Cunningham, and it goes to Mr. Enyart.
Gentlemen, our next question concerns the controversial topic of abortion. Mr. Enyart, an abortion doctor, was recently convicted of the murders of 3 newborn babies, reigniting the debate on when life begins. Federal judge also recently ruled that the morning after pill should be over the counter. When do you believe that life begins, and how do you weigh the rights of the unborn against the legal right of a woman to choose abortion?
The Constitution Party and myself both believe that life begins at conception. One thing we have to look at, what shall the official position of government be? I want you to picture something in your mind for me. I want you to picture the figurine of Lady Justice. In one hand, she's holding a sword. In one hand, she's holding the scales of justice. And across her eyes are the blindfold, so that she cannot look upon one person differently than another, the rich different than the poor, the wealthy. The official position of government must be that life, human life, must be protected at all points along the spectrum. Human life must be protected, always. That is the position of the Constitution Party. It is my petition position. Life, the pro-life plank of our platform, is the one plank that we pull up out of alphabetical order and we put it at the top of the list. This is how important it is to us. Regarding a woman's life to choose, she needs to make her choice earlier in the process and not become pregnant. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Slants, you have 1 minute to comment.
Personally, I'm opposed to abortion, and there should be no government funding of abortions. I don't like it being used as a common method of birth control. At its core, this is an individual rights decision. But at the same time we're debating the rights of the unborn, we need to also consider end-of-life issues. Each life needs to be considered on a case-by-case basis, not with broad strokes from Washington, D.C. So even though I'm personally opposed to abortion, I do not have a better solution other than maintaining the status quo as long as we're not funding abortions. If this is important to you, stop looking to the government to change it. They have it and they won't. If Ronald Reagan couldn't do anything about it in Republican-held Congress, wouldn't even address it, what makes you think any change today with Republican representation would happen? I would not support an amendment to our Constitution.
Okay, Mr. Hodges, do you have a one-minute response?
You know, I feel very very strongly about this particular issue of being a pro-life Democrat, a member of the Pro-Life Democratic Caucus. I do believe that life begins in conception. I've been very consistent with that throughout my profession in serving the House of Representatives. You know, my opponent, Mr. Smith, says he's extremely pro-life, that he opposes embryonic stem cell research, but in 2010 he voted on multiple occasions for funding to support research facilities that conducted human cloning and that used stem cell. If you're going to be extremely pro-life, how can you vote to approve research on human cloning? I don't think that meshes very well.
Okay, and Mr. Smith, do you have a one-minute response?
Here you go again, Steve Hodges, making up some more attacks and lies. All I can say is that actions speak louder than words. Missouri Right to Life has chose to only endorse one candidate in this race because of their voting record. I am that candidate. The reason why they chose not to endorse Representative Hodges is because he decided to follow the leadership of the Democrat Party and refused to override Governor Jay Nixon's veto of a bill that said you cannot force employers to provide abortion services in their health care coverage. This gentleman refused to override his Democrat governor to override the veto of the Democrat governor. He will do the same thing in Washington. He will go right along with President Obama and Nancy Pelosi, and that's the last thing the 8th District needs in Washington, D.C.
Okay, gentlemen, thank you. The next question will come from Mr. Miller, and it will be this time for Mr. Slants.
Mr. Slants, the issue of gay marriage has been in the news a lot lately. Do you support legalized gay marriage? And if not, do you think that tax breaks ought to be given to married heterosexual couples if gay citizens are not allowed to marry?
I believe the government should have no role in marriage whatsoever, but it does. Some states have legislated that marriage needs to be only between a man and a woman, Some states have legalized same-sex marriage. But there's only one reason government has anything to do with it at all, and it's because of the money. Do we really marry for money? Currently, there are 1,100 laws on the books that benefit married couples. Social Security survivor benefits, joint tax returns, adoption rights are just a few. There's common law marriage, palimony, child support. I can't imagine why same-sex couples should be treated any differently, for better or for worse. So it is a federal issue. All couples, including same-sex couples, deserve equal rights and equal protection. When I say all couples, I'm talking about all couples. If a brother and a sister were to live together all by themselves, would we deny them the same benefits that a married couple would get if they were dependent on each other? We'll get through this. Future generations will look back and wonder why marriage of same-sex couples was ever an issue. We already look back and wonder why mixed-race couples was ever an issue. Things are changing, and I encourage tolerance and acceptance.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Hodges, your turn for 1 minute.
I would be proud to comment on this. I was raised in the Methodist Church, continue to be a faithful member. I'm against same-sex marriage. I believe in traditional marriage between a man and a woman. And I'd like to say to Mr. Smith on that vote that I made, Mr. Smith, I know that you're not married and you probably haven't had any concerns about your female partner and medical conditions she might have. If you were, you would probably know that abortion pills sometimes are used not to prevent abortion, but to solve medical problems that females have. And that was one of the reasons why I voted to sustain the governor's veto. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Smith, you have 1 minute to respond.
You voted for it before you voted against it, because Nixon then told you not to override it, Representative Hodges. Marriage is clear. It should be defined between man and a woman. That's it.
And finally, Mr. Enyart, you have 1 minute to respond.
The family is the solid foundation upon which society has been founded for as long as history has been recorded. Father, mother, children. You know those unintended consequences I mentioned earlier? Every time we start mixing it up, we have unintended consequences. We don't want to go down this road. Every society that has ever gone down this road has not long survived. The United States of America, if we let this be the law of the land and take us over, we will not long survive, because the family is the social fabric. It's our foundation. It holds us together. We need the family to remain intact. It has worked throughout human history. Thank you.
Okay, gentlemen, thank you. We're back to Mr. Hodges for the next question, and Mr. Cunningham has it.
Actually, we're going to switch up, if you don't mind, so
all right,
we get
that
different
would be
candidates.
Fine. Mr. Miller, I guess we'll ask the next question.
Okay. For Mr. Hodges, right? Mr. Hodges, you have stated that there are parts of the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, that you agree with, and some parts that you don't. Do you feel the Affordable Care Act will do more good or harm to the economy, and what parts do you support or not support?
Well, first of all, in the Affordable Health Care Act, there's two things that I look for. One is, what effect is it going to have on small business, and what effect it is going to have on middle-class families? Those things are very important to me. I think that some of the positive things about the Affordable Health Care Act is that it will be able to allow for people with existing medical conditions to be accepted under medical coverage. Another thing is, for families that have students in school, in college, trying to finish their education, for them to continue to have coverage. I think those things are good. I am very concerned about the cost that it would have, the cost effect it would have on small business and their viability. I've been there and done that. I did it for 30 years, from 1975 to 2005. I understand what those problems are, and at this point, I could not support the Affordable Health Care Act as it is.
Okay, Mr. Smith, your turn for a one-minute response.
The Democrat senator, Senator Max Baucus, who was one of the original architects to the Obamacare, has described Obamacare as a train wreck Folks, Nancy Pelosi thought she needed to pass the bill before she read it. Obamacare is a mess. It's a crisis. It's killing small businesses, and the last thing we need is government to be in the middle between a doctor and a patient. I support fully the complete repeal of Obamacare.
Mr. Anyard, you have 1 minute.
Obamacare, 2,700 pages. It seems like Congress can't pass any legislation that's under 1,000 pages anymore. I've written some technical documents. I think I can do a better job than that. But Obamacare, there's so much bad about Obamacare. It's the cost. The Congressional Budget Office every time they come up with a new estimate, the cost goes up. And it's, the last I heard, $2.6 trillion over a 10-year period. You remember that 46 cents on every dollar that the government's spending, that we're borrowing on the backs of my grandchildren? What's Obamacare going to do? It's just going to add more. Now, we've got to get rid of Obamacare. We've got to dismantle it, totally repeal it, and start all over. Are there problems with health care? Of course. There's problems with everything. Are we looking for perfect? It doesn't exist. We can do better, but it's not Obamacare.
Okay, and Mr. Slance, you have 1 minute.
The Affordable Care Act is neither affordable nor caring, and it should be repealed without replacing. But our vision needs to be much more bold than just that. We don't look to State Farm and Allstate every time we want to fill up our tanks or change our oil. Why should we be counting on health insurance for our routine health needs? Health insurance should be reserved for the catastrophic. The biggest reason health care expenses are high is because of the lobbyists and the special interest. By design, they keep the cost high and the supply low. This is what I would do. I would support legislation to dissolve the FDA. I would introduce legislation to make all drugs available over the counter, everything. By reducing licensing and laws that restrict entry into medical practice, more medical practitioners would enter health care. Last, let's just get the government out of health care business altogether. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. We have the next question now that will begin with Mr. Smith. And if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Cunningham is going to ask it this time.
Thank you. Mr. Smith, former Congresswoman Joanne Emerson talked candidly after her resignation about how the willingness to compromise has all but disappeared in Congress. How is partisanship getting in the way of moving our country forward, and how open will you be, if elected, to compromise?
You know, to get anything done, you have to work with everyone. I have that proven track record. For the last 8 years in the Missouri House, I've been very effective. I've not been a wallflower in Jefferson City. I've reformed regulations. I've reduced taxes. I have fought to protect agriculture, and I've done that by crossing the party line. I have a lot of friends on both sides. The thing that we have to understand is that you cooperate. You don't compromise on your core values. It's okay to disagree. Just be respectful about it. You know, there's numerous Democrats that pass bills in the Missouri House every year. This year, we had 15% of the House Democrats pass bills. I'm the only one on this entire panel that has ever passed legislation to reduce government regulations, to protect our Second Amendment. You can say you've been up there, but I can tell you one thing. I will never go up to Washington, D.C. and just sit around and collect my per diem. My opponent, on the other hand, has decided just this past session to go up 5 times, not even cast a vote. Even during budget, which is our one constitutional responsibility, but he sure checked in to get his state government per diem. I won't be doing that in Washington, D.C.
Okay, Mr. Anyard, you have 1 minute.
Well, there's something to be said about gridlock being good for us, but compromise is sometimes necessary if you can do it without compromising your principles. Now, it seems to me that the federal government, although they like to put on a good show, they like to make us think that they're really fighting for us or fighting against the other side, the fact is they're pretty cooperative amongst themselves. And I've noticed that they're very willing to cooperate and pass laws when it infringes upon the rights of the states, usurps the states' rights, or it takes something away from we, the people. Just as the recent vote that both the Democrat and the Republican voted for at the federal level to prevent the state of Missouri from labeling genetically modified organism foods. Thank you.
Okay, and Mr. Slance, you have 1 minute.
Get along. The government today lacks leadership dramatically, from the very top down, from the executive branch right through the Speaker of the House. It lacks leadership. The government is never going to function under its present state. 90% of all congressmen are attorneys. Attorneys are trained to win at all costs and never give in, even through sleight of hand or by deception. Never give up the fight. Win at all costs. That's not a recipe for compromise. Lobbyists and special interests are propping these politicians up, and they expect favor in return for their support. There's no way that anybody's going to cross the aisle or vote against a lobbyist or a special interest. The money and the power, that's where the big grab is. So until you get rid of those three things, the attorneys, the lobbyists, and the money and power grab, you will never have compromise across the aisles.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Hodges, you get the last word on this one for 1 minute.
Well, thank you very much. I would like to make a statement, go on record, saying I think this has been one of the most biased, poorly run sessions in my 7 years in the Missouri House. We've had record numbers of previous questions issued that would stop debate, and if this is the spirit of bipartisanship that you're looking for, then I don't think we found it yet. I'd like to ask Mr. Smith this. Is he absolutely correct on my voting record? Well, you can check the journal, and you can see that I voted on the days that he has said that I wasn't there, and I did cast votes. And if you want to know about bipartisanship, check the House Journal and see how many times he voted to support Democratic bills. I have had legislation passed, and the way I got it passed was I didn't have any Democratic committee chairman to go to. I had Republicans. And I took my ideas and I took my legislation and I worked with them and worked out the differences and got legislation passed on omnibus bills. That's what bipartisanship should be about. We're not doing that in Washington, D.C., but I have done that in Jefferson City. And I plan to do that in Washington, D.C. I invite you, any of you, to check the records and see how many times that I have crossed the aisle and how I've worked with other people, other members of the Republican Party, to get problems solved and find common ground.
Okay, thank you. Now, we have another question. This time we'll begin with Mr. Enyart, and Mr. Miller, I believe, has the question.
Recent media coverage has shown that politicians are divided on an education curriculum reform known as Common Core. First, specifically, where do you stand on the issue of having baseline standards across the nation? And secondly, what role, if any, should the federal government have in education?
I do not support Common Core. As I've gone across this district listening to people in different forums, different groups, some of those are liberty groups, some of those are property rights groups. I've been hearing a lot about Common Core. My wife is a first grade teacher. I'm hearing from her. I'm hearing from other teachers. Common Core is not good for us. One thing about Common Core is it has a very strict regimen. It doesn't matter if you're ready to move on to your students on to the next segment, you have to move to the next segment. Teachers need the latitude to teach to the class. Every class, just like every individual, has a different personality, a different character. They learn at different rates. They learn in different ways. I've learned this from my wife. The teacher in the classroom must have the latitude to teach to the kids on their level the way that they learn. Common Core does not allow that. Another thing that Common Core gets into is data mining. They're going to ask the kids questions. They're going to record the answers to those questions. They're treating us like cattle. Where did we get the idea that we all had to be standardized anyway? A schoolroom in St. Louis has kids and needs very different than a schoolroom in Wyoming. There has to be flexibility. We don't all want to be the same. There's at least 50 states and at least 50 different laboratories. And below that, there's districts. give us the latitude to make our decisions and teach our kids the way that they need to be taught. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Slance, you have 1 minute for a response.
The federal government needs to be eliminated from the education equation altogether. If government were to be involved in education at all, the highest level would be at the state. My feelings about educating children should come from decisions of the parents and the children. Parents need to be given the space to make the right decisions for their children and not be mandated by government on curriculum or the way they educate. If elected, I would introduce legislation to abolish the Department of Education. It should no longer exist.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hodges. You have 1 minute.
Well, thank you. Education has always been one of my key issues. I was a member of the Board of Education in East Prairie for 12 years, served as a substitute teacher. My wife and my son are teachers. I have spoken with your administration, your school administrators here in Cape Girardeau, and they support Common Core. They told me that it is a starting point for building blocks for them to be able to put out a common format for education to start at the lower levels and go up. But you should still be able to have local control so that they have flexibility. I agree with Mr. Inhart. They still have to have some flexibility within the classroom. They shouldn't be dictated as to how to teach their class. That's one of the things that I think is inhibiting public education in Missouri and all over the nation.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Smith, you have 1 minute.
The best government is the government that's closest to the people. It's the best, and it's the most effective. In regards to the federal government dictating policy at the local level, in regards to education, I think that's unacceptable. And I think it's the local level that needs to decide their standards and not the federal government.
All right, gentlemen, thank you. The next question will come from Mr. Cunningham, and this time we start with Mr. Slance.
Mr. Slance, you said that you support open immigration. Could you specify what you mean by that, and what are your solutions to the country's immigration problems, especially as it relates to our economic viability and our safety from terrorists?
I believe in the free movement of people across borders, the same as our ancestors did, leaving terrible conditions in their homeland for a better life in the United States. I oppose any form of welfare benefits for those who enter illegally. Legal immigrants must always be welcome. Border states do have some problems with violence because of our failed war on drugs. Our infrastructure is stressed due to the availability of welfare. So the key is not to reform immigration laws, but rather to end the welfare state. Fear of illegal immigration should not be used to justify police state measures such as a national ID card or drones. To become a U.S. citizen, every immigrant should take their place in the back of the line and go through the process as everyone else. I don't believe there should ever be a wall. The wall is offensive to me. This is not Berlin.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hodges. You have 1 minute to respond.
Well, first of all, I think that our strengthening of our policy, immigration policies, is long overdue. We've waited too long. We've waited until it's become an epidemic. We need to strengthen our borders, and we need to come up with a system that allows businesses that have legal people here on working visas to be identified and separate those from people who are not legal. I suggest that we develop a verifiable, tamper-proof worker identification card for work visas and tie that electronically to a real-time national database where employers can verify whether their workers are legal or not.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Smith, your turn for a one-minute comment.
I'm opposed to amnesty of any sort. I think we need to secure our borders, and we need to make sure government benefits don't go to illegal immigrants. There's a pathway of citizenship. You just need to obey the law in order to receive that. You know, I keep saying that we need to make Washington more like Missouri. I, in fact, co-sponsored legislation that passed and became law that provided that Missouri state benefits cannot be used by illegal immigrants. We need that in Washington, D.C. as well.
Okay, and Mr. Enyart, you have 1 minute.
I understand why illegal immigrants cross the border. I've been to Mexico. I like Mexico. I love Mexican food. I've been around Mexican people. I even stood up in a Mexican wedding once. And we're talking about the border with Mexico, so let's be frank about it. However, United States citizens, Missouri citizens, have to come first. I may have feelings for the Mexican people, but Missouri has to come first. We have to close the border, and I do not favor amnesty whatsoever. Those who are already here illegally, they knew they were breaking the law when they crossed the border. They can go back out the door. They can get in line behind the 4 million people who are in line trying to do it the way we like to say, the right way, and try again. Thank you.
All right. We're back to Mr. Hodges for the next question, and that question will come from Mr. Miller, I believe.
Mr. Hodges, the Obama administration has taken criticism recently with stories surfacing about the IRS cracking down on conservative groups and the government secretly obtaining a broad swath of phone and email records of the media in the interest of identifying who leaked information. What was your initial response to these reports, and what is your opinion on how the administration is handling these scandals?
Well, I think President Obama showed a real lack of leadership in these particular situations. This is similar to the Benghazi incidents when we had security information available to us to know that something might possibly happen, and we didn't take steps to secure the security of those four men that got killed. The invasion of privacy among several target groups by the IRS is not acceptable. Their job is to collect the revenue to correct the income tax. It's not to target groups within our United States that have the liberties and the respect that they should have. I oppose that, and also I oppose the way that the Associated Press has been treated. And I think President Obama, I think he sought the resignation of the young lady that headed the IRS. I think anybody associated with that that follows those directives ought to be removed, and not just removed and placed in another government entity. I'm talking about removed from government service.
Okay, Mr. Smith, do you have a one-minute response?
Yes, it's absolutely unacceptable. Whether it's the IRS issue of targeting conservatives, Tea Party advocates, whether it's the Obama administration targeting reporters, whether it's Fast and Furious, whether it's Benghazi, you name it, the Obama administration, the Democrat Party, the party of Pelosi, the party of my opponent, Steve Hodges, they're the ones doing this. Folks, the last thing we need in Washington, D.C., is another vote for Nancy Pelosi or another supporter of Obama. I can tell you right now, I will never vote for Nancy Pelosi as Speaker of the House, and I will not support the reckless agenda of President Obama.
Mr. Enyart, your turn for a one-minute response.
IRS, Department of Justice, the Homeland Security, Minerals Management Service, Securities and Exchange Service. Time after time after time again, we see that our federal agencies are not doing the job that they're purportedly supposed to be doing, but then they are infringing on rights. They're breaking the law themselves. The bottom line, folks, is we've got too much government. We've got so much government that the people that we elect to represent us can't even keep track of it. They're not in charge of it. They just write more laws and create more federal bureaucracies, and then they just let it sail off in the sunset, write its own regulations, which are 10 times, if not 100 times, more than the law had included in it to begin with. Unintended consequences. Bottom line, we have too much government, and we've got to start paring it down so that we, the people, can control it. Thank you.
Okay, and Mr. Slance, you have 1 minute to respond.
Since its inception, every administration has used the IRS as its henchman. This is nothing new. This has been going on since the very first day. (Clears throat) No one has the courage to do anything about it. If elected, I would introduce legislation first to eliminate the income tax across the board, corporate and personal. Then next, I would introduce legislation to abolish the IRS, not allowing it to be used in this manner any longer by any future administrations. Thank you.
All right, thank you. We're rapidly running out of time, but I believe we have time for one more question. I think Mr. Cunningham has it, and we start with Mr. Smith.
Mr. Smith, our world faces no shortage of international conflicts, and the United States faces several difficult scenarios. When do you feel the use of U.S. military force would be necessary, if at all, in places like Iran, North Korea, and perhaps most urgently, Syria?
First off, the use of force outside of our country needs to be decided by Congress, and it needs to be a vote of Congress, not just the actions of the president. In regards to foreign policy, I believe that we need to do everything we can to make our national defense strong and the most powerful military in the United States. Unfortunately, we've seen the Obama administration continue to decide that he wants to cut military and has even questioned the possibility of different military bases, one being close to home in Fort Leonard Wood. One thing that I will do, fight to protect our military and fight to strengthen our national defense.
Okay, Mr. Enyart, you have 1 minute to respond.
Democrat, Republican, it really doesn't matter. Somehow we've got the idea that we're the world's policemen, and that simply isn't true. We cannot go everywhere across the globe and intervene in other countries' business. What they may be doing there, we may not like, we may disagree with it, but we can't fix the entire globe. As for foreign policy, we need to support our own people. If there's a credible threat to our nation or to our people in another nation, we need to go in and eliminate the threat. And then on the way back out the door, we can tell them, if you act up again, we'll be back.
Okay, Mr. Slantz.
American foreign policy should seek an America at peace. We should abandon attempts to act as policemen for the world. Enhance the likelihood of peace by avoiding foreign entanglements. Our military should be strong and state-of-the-art. However, the United States cannot afford the cost in blood and money of maintaining a global empire. Stop the occupation of other countries. Let's close every military base around the world, leaving only our domestic bases here. Keep this in mind. With a major overhaul to our foreign policy, we could eliminate many terrorist threats.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hodges. You have the final one-minute response.
Thank you. Well, first of all, Ms. Smith, I want to tell you that I'm not on President Obama or Nancy Pelosi's Christmas card list, and I probably won't be after tonight. But anyway, that's okay. You know, I have had a unique opportunity in my life. My wife and I, one of our middle sons, went to the United States Military Academy, graduated in class in 99, served and was stationed in Europe for 6 years, served in Bosnia and Kosovo, and served in North Iraq for a year. Some very anxious moments. It was a very long year, especially that year in North Iraq. I've always believed in supporting the military. I think we have to be very delicate in our military presence in different areas, different arenas. The situation in Syria is very volatile, but I'm glad that our boys are coming home from Afghanistan. But I think that we need to keep a safe and secure and stout military program, and we also need to pay attention to the benefits for our veterans. They're very important. Thank you.
All right, thank you. That concludes the question and answer period. So now we move to closing statements. As you know, each candidate will have 2 minutes to sum up. We're going to start with the two candidates who spoke last in the opening round. So that means we'll start with Mr. Enyart and then Mr. Slantz. Mr. Enyart, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you, sir. I've gone across this district in this campaign, talking to small groups all over the place, and I've been making the same pledge to all of them. And I'll make it on live TV tonight, for the record. And I pledge to you that I will refuse access to me by all paid lobbyists, and I ask my colleagues on this stage to join me in that pledge. I will write legislation that will remove my own retirement benefits retroactive to January 1st, 2013, so that I don't serve one term and then get lifetime retirement benefits. I deserve only what I contribute to while I'm in there. Furthermore, I have several plans for reducing the size of government, for helping veterans. I am a veteran. Who else can represent veterans better than another veteran? I served a six-year term in the United States Marine Corps, and then two-year terms in active reserves. I built my own business from scratch. In my business, I have worked for people all across this district. I'm located in Piedmont. It's the geographic center of the state. I've worked in almost every county multiple times. I know this district, and I can serve the people, and I pledge that I will be the people's representative.
Thank you. Mr. Slance, you have 2 minutes for a closing statement.
I have some very specific ideas and proposals of how to put the government into check. As I said before, if elected, I would sponsor legislation to repeal income tax. Health care. Let's end government involvement in health care across the board. If elected, I would sponsor legislation to repeal Obamacare, not replace it. Let's cut spending. If elected, I will immediately sponsor legislation to eliminate the DHS. They have served their purpose. Also the TSA, as well as the EPA, the DEA, and IRS. I said it before, and it can't be said enough. Jason Smith seems pretty proud of the dozen or so endorsements he's received from Big Ag, pharmaceuticals, and the Right to Life. You know what I hear? Lobbyist, lobbyist, lobbyist. Whose phone call do you think he'll take first? The lobbyist or yours? Here's what I can offer to you and my advantage to you. I do not need to be politically correct. I am beholden to no one but you. I have the freedom of never having to answer to special interest. Every policy decision I make will be based on principle, not party ideals. My party does not expect me to toe the party line. The libertarian tent is a pretty big one, and there's enough room in here for all of you. Let's make world history next week and put the first libertarian in U.S. Congress. Let's vote for liberty. Let's vote for freedom. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Slance. Now, the final two closing statements will be from Mr. Hodges and Mr. Smith in that order. So, Mr. Hodges, you have 2 minutes for a closing statement.
Okay, very good. Thank you. You know, again, I'd like to thank the organizers of this event. I hope that the audience and those viewers at home have gained something from this, that they have become informed voters. That was one of the things that from when my first campaign, I encouraged people to register to vote, but prior to voting, become informed voters, and I hope that answered a lot of questions for you folks tonight. We've talked a lot about our stance on the issues, but I'd like to take just a moment to make some pledges to you for what I will do after I get elected next week. I pledge not to be beholden to any one party or another, and to vote for the best interest of my district, not special interest. I pledge to protect Social Security and Medicare from those in Washington who attempt to dismantle it. I pledge not to raise taxes on hardworking Missouri families. I pledge to apply my work ethic and common sense to approaches that I have learned here in Southeast Missouri while I'm in Washington, D.C. People need representation in Washington that works for them. That's what I've done my entire life. I was reared that way. From operating my supermarket to serving you folks in Jefferson City for these past 7 years. I'll do the same thing in Washington, D.C. My name's Steve Hodges, and I appreciate your vote on June 4th. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hodges. And the final closing statement belongs to Mr. Smith.
I want to thank the Southeast Missourian and also KFVS 12 and also Southeast Missouri State University for hosting this event. It's great to allow myself and the other candidates to be able to express our views. Folks, this election is crucial. It's a week from today. I've been crisscrossing this district in all 30 counties multiple times, visiting with with men and women who are the heartbeat of America. They believe in our rural way of life. They believe that government's headed in the wrong direction under the Obama administration and the liberal policies. Folks, I'm definitely not your typical politician. You look at the folks up here, I'm clearly the youngest. I may have the least amount of hair on the stage. It's not gray, but the quality of my experience is very important. Washington is full of experience. We need a different type of experience. We need what I call Missouri common sense. We need to make Washington a lot more like Missouri. In Missouri, I have a record of passing a budget, balancing a budget, passing legislation that reforms burdensome regulations. There's over 170,000 pages of rules and regulations at the federal level. The Obama administration tried to regulate children working on family farms. Folks, that's the wrong direction for our country. I have fought for our Second Amendment rights. I have fought to protect the unborn. I have fought to get government off our backs and out of our way, and I will continue to do it. I've stood up to the party bosses. I've stood up to the big money interest. What I want to do is to stand up for you in Washington, D.C. I'm asking for your vote on June 4th.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our debate. So at this point, I invite you to join me in expressing your appreciation for the candidates who participated tonight. Again, we thank the candidates, Mr. Hodges, Mr. Smith, Mr. Enghart, Mr. Slants. We also want to thank our two questioners, Mr. Miller and Mr. Cunningham. I also want to thank the civic-minded sponsors of this event tonight, Southeast Missouri State University, KFES Channel 12 Television, and the Southeast Missourian. We remind you, in case you might need reminding, that the election is next week, and I know all of these candidates would appreciate your coming out. However you vote, we think it's important that you exercise your franchise. We hope what happened tonight maybe give you some additional opportunity for a more informed decision. That concludes our event tonight. Thank you for being here, and good night.